It's a Friday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we're recapping the Heat's loss to the Lakers, and then we'll go to Twitter to answer some of your questions and comments about the game.
And then we'll get to our spotlight performances of the game before looking at where the Heat stand in the current playoff race. Let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who has covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
Like we said at the top, we are talking about the Miami Heat's loss to the Lakers. They fall 131 to 113 in just what amounts to a really bad loss for the Heat. We talked about the importance of this five-game homestand that the Heat are on. They won the first two games, but they lost to the Lakers. They gave up more points than they have at any point this season to a Lakers team that's just, frankly, not very good. They're playing well lately, but this is still a bad loss at home. Of course, the Heat were without Tyler Johnson and Wayne Ellington, so they had to switch up the starting lineup. They played Goran Dragic, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, and then inserted Kelly Olynyk next to Hassan Whiteside. And that group, specifically, and we'll talk about this in depth pretty much throughout the whole show, but that group with Olynyk and Whiteside really couldn't keep up with the Lakers' speed and just the pace with which they play. And just to sort of go to start with the beginning of the game, the Lakers got out to a 20-9 lead to basically open up the first quarter. And despite Miami making a run to get back into the game, I thought that those first few minutes, David, were pretty indicative of Miami's night overall, with the Lakers winning this one pretty easily.
Yeah, listen, I mean, when I covered the Lakers recently, Luke Walton explained the basic offensive philosophy, if you want to call it that, in lieu of having any really quality shooting, because, of course, the Lakers are second to last in three-point shooting, although that wasn't apparent in the game against Miami. Their philosophy is to push the ball up as often as and frequently as possible. They get a rebound, they're outletting it. Whether that leads to a turnover or not, they don't care. Everybody in that backcourt knows, basically everybody on the team knows, once you get that ball, you're pushing, 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 looking for easy opportunities because their offense isn't powerful enough to generate those points on their own. So that was pretty much the way they handled Miami. Miami just couldn't compensate for that quick outlet pass, and they were suddenly trying to play catch-up. They would lead to fouls, and it was just a really bad showing. I got to be honest with you, though. I saw the starting lineup for the Lakers, and I'm thinking to myself, what the hell is Kelly Olynyk doing out there? In his second game back, I rarely criticize Eric Spoelstra, but I honestly think that was one of the stupidest decisions I've ever seen, was to start Olynyk. Like, on a night when you need somebody to be quick enough to handle a guy like Julius Randle, what the hell is the 7-foot-tall Canadian with feet stuck in cement doing out there trying to guard Randle? I mean, Randle obliterated us in the first quarter. He looked more deadly than ever. I know you're a huge Randle fan, but that was a night where you could have put Bam out there. You could have put James Johnson, probably the better choice, to be honest with you. Just somebody out there other than Kelly goddamn Olynyk.
I thought even Luke Babbitt would have been a better option there. You know, if you want to keep bringing James Johnson off the bench because he's been more effective lately doing that, like, yeah, just play Babbitt at that other forward spot next to Winslow, or play Magruder. You know, and I know that Magruder is just getting back, but you're right. Having Olynyk out there, I mean, the Lakers pounced on it. You know, and as specifically Julius Randle, who looked like friggin' Kareem out there. I mean, he was unbelievable. Like, they just didn't have an answer for him. And, you know, the headlines are also going to be about Isaiah Thomas, right? He scored 29 points. It was his season high. It was the most points Isaiah Thomas has scored since the playoffs against the Wizards last season. I mean, the Heat gave that game up to Isaiah Thomas, who has been struggling, to say the least, all season long. And again, that'll be the headline, but you're right. I mean, Julius Randle setting the tone early, and then Lonzo Ball had a phenomenal game, I thought, for the Lakers. I mean, how many? He only scored
8 points.
8 points, but he had 7 assists, 6 rebounds. He had 6 steals in the game. He was a plus 24 for the game. He was leading the breaks. He was doing all the little things for the Lakers. the reasons why you draft somebody like Lonzo Ball as high as they did. He was doing all that stuff for LA. And I thought Ball and Randall in particular sort of set the tone for Los Angeles early, and that's sort of why they dominated that game against Miami.
There was one play in particular where Randall kind of corralled a loose ball, a rebound that was coming his way, and he whipped this pass quickly over to the baseline, I think to a wide open Isaiah Thomas, who knocked down a three-pointer, and that was just – it was a demoralizing point there. Like, there were so many throughout the game, but Miami seemed to have a little momentum going their way in the fourth quarter, and that shot pretty much killed it. And it was just – it was tough to come back all night. You know, that first quarter from Randall – you know, really set the tone for them, because they created such a large deficit. And unfortunately, Miami, without Wayne Ellington or Tyler Johnson, who have been such a boost for Miami's offense, with both those guys out, they just didn't have the shooters out there to compensate. I mean, it was a fine showing from other players like Justice Winslow, who we'll talk about later in the show, and even Rodney Magruder had a nice game as well, and it's like just his second game back, but not enough offense there to compensate. We talked about this when we had our podcast yesterday with Ronan Carney of The Crossover. You know, that there was no urgency from Miami, that they just couldn't allow that kind of philosophy of getting those double-digit deficits and then just trying to find a way to come back on a nightly basis, and it burnt them today really badly.
Let's talk a little bit more about that defense next when we get to your tweets that you sent in using the hashtag. Yeah, I guess so. That's what people want. People sent in stuff using the hashtag AskLOHeat. But first, quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA, which will be revamping its format. In addition to hosting Locked On Heat on a daily basis, Dave and I will be hosting Locked On NBA every Tuesday. It'll be a digestible show, just 20 to 30 minutes long, delivering the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day.
Just as Locked On Heat is your daily briefing for all things Miami Heat related, Locked On NBA is your first stop for the most important headlines and analysis from around the NBA. There's 29 other teams out there, some of which have much better games than Miami did tonight. So go on there. Leave us a review on iTunes, and please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app.
Bring it to our spotlight players later on. Let's go to Twitter first and see what you guys sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. David, we got two tweets here that I want to read off to you. They're both related to what you already know that they're related to, this defense. Trey tweets in, "I feel like this game was a random predicament. We honestly have a good defense, but the Lakers just had some shots that fell through. What do you all think?" And then Julie tweets in, "What happened to the Heat's defense?" In parentheses, beside Hassan Whiteside just having an awful game. So Trey and Julie seem to have different opinions, right? It seems like, you know, there might be a causal thing here, and then according to Julie, and then for Trey, like it might seem like it's just, hey, sometimes the shots just fall, and that happens. I think this game was a combination of both, and that's probably hedging my bets a little bit. You know, it's an obvious thing to say when a team comes into your house and scores 131 points on you. Yeah, some shots are just falling. But look, the Lakers scored 22 fast break points, and Miami only turned it over 11 times, and which leads you to believe that the Lakers were just getting out on the break faster than Miami was. Like, they were just, even after scores, they were getting out, and after misses, they were getting out off of rebounds and getting out early. They only had six offensive rebounds in this game. So it wasn't second chance points. This wasn't a matter of something like that. Freaky bouncing balls, you know, those 50-50 balls that sometimes go one team's way or another. This was simply the Lakers just outrunning the Heat down the court sometimes. I don't know how else to put it, but there was just so many times where I thought Miami, you know, gave up open threes because they were confused defensively on assignments, or they were trying to match up on certain things in transition, and the Lakers were just blowing by them for layups. This just seemed like the Lakers were simply faster than Miami. Miami just could not keep up.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Look, I, to your point about turnovers, you know, Miami's 11 turnovers led to 21 points for the Lakers, as opposed to 14 turnovers from the Lakers only leading to 11 points. Like, that's just a style difference there. Like, that's indicative of like a real sharp contrast in styles. Like, Miami's offense is, okay, we got a steal. Let's pass it to somebody, slowly bring the ball up court, look for a shot, milk the shot clock down to the last second, et cetera, as opposed to the Lakers, who are like, all right, turnover, pass, bucket. And it worked. Like, Miami just had no answer for it. I mean, for a brief moment there in the second quarter, when they had that quicker lineup. Was that the end of the first or the second or start of the second quarter when Miami kind of closed that deficit a little bit when they replaced Whiteside? So at that point, that's when it was, that was the best moment of the game, to be honest with you. I felt myself actually getting energized thinking that there might be a chance for Miami to come back and make it a real interesting game, but it's just, they just couldn't keep up with that pace. I don't know if it was exhaustion. I don't know what it was. The Lakers had been in town for a couple of days. Maybe they were pretty well rested. But again, that style difference was such a huge, huge contrast there. Miami just didn't have any way of responding to it.
It was like an extreme version of that Pelicans game a few nights back where going into that New Orleans game, you and I were talking about on the show here that Miami needed to control the tempo, control the pace of the game, slow it down, you know what I mean, and make it a physical game. That's how Miami is winning games, is by doing that, by controlling the pace and playing a little bit slower. They just – and maybe to your point earlier, why does Spoelstra start Olynyk with Whiteside? Okay, well, maybe it's Spoelstra's answer or attempt to try to control the pace by playing slower, and it seemed like – that's what they were trying to do early in the game. And the Lakers were like, cool, play slow. We're going to keep playing fast, though. Yeah. And it just didn't work. Like, it backfired. You know, I think that strategy backfired. And I don't know what other option Spoelstra realistically had. You know, maybe he should have started James Johnson there. I still don't think that the answer is Bam Adebayo next to Whiteside. They went to that in the second to start the second half, right. And it just didn't work. I mean, that lineup simply cannot score the basketball. I think they're somewhere around 86 or 87 points per 100 possessions, which is god awful, like just horrendous. So, look, Spoelstra is still struggling to find a front court partner next to Whiteside. I mean, just Whiteside is such a kind of a one-trick pony, you know, that he's not a versatile player at all. And I don't want to put the blame on him. It's just, it's hard to find guys in today's NBA who could play next to him. Justice Winslow has been their best option, but when Ellington and Tyler Johnson are both injured, it kind of forces you to play more guys into that backcourt. You move Josh Richardson into the backcourt, and now, you know, that leaves Spoelstra sort of reshuffling the deck there. And depending on how long Tyler and Ellington are out, you know, you wonder how many more experiments that Spoelstra is going to have to work with in order to find a suitable front court pairing that can play in today's league. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. You know, one of the things that a lot of our listeners brought up following that Philadelphia game was that that was such a huge game for Whiteside, because we saw that effort. And, you know, as I pointed out in that podcast, I really think a lot of that was being inspired by, you know, Embiid being out there on the floor. Tonight, without that motivation, that wasn't there. Now, I don't know that he necessarily played a bad game in that sense. Like, I don't think he played enough to actually judge whether or not he was fully engaged.
There was no energy, man.
He was overmatched, though. I mean, that's just what it was. I don't know. I don't even know if it was engaged.
Brooke, like, that's the problem. I mean, he was overmatched by Brooke Lopez?
No, he wasn't on Lopez. He was on Randall. That's another confusing thing. It's like, where are you're putting Olynyk on Brooke Lopez? I mean, look, neither of them are particularly quick, either Olynyk or Whiteside. But Whiteside was just, like, stuck in the mud out there with Randall looking like Hakeem Olajuwon. I mean,
there was a point in the first quarter where Whiteside – a shot went up by one of the Heat players, and Whiteside just stood around right below the key and didn't even chase the rebound. And then the Lakers got the rebound, pushed the pace in transition. I think it was Julius Randle actually who pushed the pace, and then scored at the other end. And you're looking at Whiteside like, look, if you're not going to chase the rebound, fine, like that's okay. Like if you're not going to chase the rebound in the name of transition defense, we all know that I'm all in favor of that, but. He didn't do that. He just sort of stood around. So to me, Whiteside just didn't come out with that energy. And it's funny, we read the stories and the reports about Whiteside sitting down with Eric Spoelstra. And this is going to Julie's tweet here where he asked about Whiteside. You read these stories about Whiteside sitting down with Spoelstra and Spoelstra saying, look, it's not about the numbers. It's about those in-between things. It's about the effort that you're putting in consistently. If you're not – look, I won't yank you as fast, but you got to come out with energy, you know? And that was kind of the agreement that they settled with. And Whiteside just – look, I thought that Spoelstra didn't yank him soon enough, you know? I get like – look, you want to give Whiteside a little bit of a longer leash right now because you've told him that. And I appreciate Spoelstra doing that. I do. But rather than pulling them after like 4 minutes when it was quite clear that Whiteside just didn't have the juice to play in this game. It took until the end of the first quarter, and look, they didn't lose the game because of that. They actually ended up tying the game. They could have won that game still, and Whiteside only played 19 minutes, so Spoelstra did abandon ship on Whiteside fairly soon, but that's the problem when we talk about Whiteside coming out that intensity. He just did not have that intensity tonight, and it's not for a lack of his ability. Like, it didn't seem like the energy was there either. You know, he would have been better off if the energy was at least there.
So what would you offer the Lakers in a sign and trade to acquire Julius Randle?
Oh my gosh. All right. So history here. I'm a big Julius Randle fan, have been since he played at Kentucky. I have called him the future Draymond Green several times, have written about it for FanRag a couple of times. Not just once, but twice.
It's getting a little, I love Julius Randle, I gotta be honest with you, it's a little scary.
He's one of my guys. He's one of my guys.
How's the shrine coming along?
Julius, it's coming out nice. Yeah. He's looking good. I almost got the mohawk right. He was the best player on the court tonight. I mean, he was better than any other player. He's better than any guy on the Heat. I would probably trade anybody on the Heat's roster. I know you're joking, but I'm actually answering it. I would trade anybody outside of Bam and Josh and probably Winslow.
I'm not really joking, to be honest with you. I'm wondering, like, you know, we're talking about
you would rather have Randle than Whiteside. For 82, but not just for this matchup, but for an 82 game season, you'd rather have Randle than Whiteside, right?
I think so. I think with Randle's age and the gains he's made this year, I think he's worth it. I think he's going to enter restricted free agency, and I'm wondering, you know, guys like him, Aaron Gordon, how much they can command in that open market. There's not a lot of teams with a lot of money, so I wonder if a sign and trade might be the best thing for a team like the Lakers. So I'm curious. I mean, you know, we're looking at the front court problems, the fact that they're, you know, not.
Well, wait, you're really quick though. You're talking about the sign and trade because, of course, the Lakers are going to try to sign two max guys, right? So if they're going to do that, they'd almost have to let Randle go.
Oh yeah. They were kind of down on him early in the season. From everything I've understood, they have no intention of re-signing him this year.
Yeah. I'd almost hope that, I mean, you probably couldn't do a sign and trade with the Lakers because they'd obviously try to keep that cap space. But like a three-way deal, like, sure. if we're gonna get real about this, like, I don't know, something where somebody else takes the salary and Miami takes Randle and the Lakers just grab more cap space.
That'd be nice.
All right, well, let's get to our spotlight players next. Those will be Heat players that we're talking about. But before we move on to that, let's go to iTunes and see if we have any new reviews. David, how's it looking?
Well, we've got a great review from, well, there's a lot going on here, but let's just call him 82. 82 writes in, great podcast. Was looking for a Heat podcast about a month ago. Decided I would give this one a try, and it's amazing. The podcast is a good duration, just all around a good listen. I would recommend this podcast to any Heat fan. From the fanatics who read every article to the casual fan who can't hardly get a game, keep up the good work. So we're still at 93 reviews now. We didn't make our quota of 100 for the month of February, but that's not to say that we don't appreciate everybody that's written in so far and given us a review, or that you can't still do so. We're still looking for reviews. And of course, these reviews really help all of our listeners and future listeners, people who might not be aware of the show like 82 was. So thank you so much, 82. If you give us a review, we'll call it out on our next show. Just keep up the great work, listeners.
All right, spotlight player time, David. I know it's hard, but this is our opportunity, I suppose, to find a silver lining here. And I know that there's one player that you were impressed by in this game.
Justice Winslow, I think, had a really nice game. Like, I've been down on Justice, as a lot of people remember, and I'm still hopeful that he'll turn it around and be an adequate role player. I just don't see that he's going to be an all-around superstar at any point in his career. But you know what? Tonight was probably one of his best games. He finished with 17 points and 7 of 11 shooting, 3 of 4 from three-point range. Also chipped in 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. It was a really good, efficient game in 30 minutes for him. He played really good defense, switching onto Randle for stretches, also a limited Brandon Ingram as well. So he did his work, definitely. And most of the importantly for me was that in the midst of the Lakers making these runs, Winslow was the one guy that didn't seem fazed by all. Like, in fact, he seemed almost like energized beyond what anybody else in this team was. Everybody else was kind of just allowing these shots to take place, not really caring about bringing the ball up court. That wasn't Winslow. He was engaged. He was energized. He was making the most of these opportunities, pushing the ball up court, doing whatever he had to do defensively. And I really appreciated that on a night where there wasn't a lot of strong, energetic performances. Winslow gave the best of them, I think.
In a game that the Heat were down late in the fourth quarter by 20 points, Winslow still managed to be a plus two in the box score. I mean, that says a lot about his performance. There was a moment in the second half, there was a few minutes there actually, where Winslow's shooting was keeping Miami in the game, miraculously enough.
Two 3-pointers in a row.
Yeah, from the corner. It was a good thing to see. My spotlight player is Bam Adebayo, who played 29 minutes in the game compared to Whiteside, who played 19, and then Kelly Olynyk, who only played 13. Bam was Miami's best front court option. They didn't have an answer, the Heat didn't, for Julius Randle the entire game, but Bam was the closest thing to that. He was a plus six, just like Winslow was a plus two. I mean, that says a lot about how those guys performed. And then Bam, 15 points and 10 rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds, and 2 blocks, really kind of showing the sort of effort he came out with in that game. And in the first quarter when the Heat were down by, I think, 11 points, Spoelstra yanked Whiteside and Olynyk and brought in Bam and James Johnson. It was Bam's effort and energy that kind of led to this Miami 11-0 run that ended up tying the game. And that was the best the Heat looked all night, was when Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade were finding Bam Adebayo on screen and rolls and doing things, and Bam was getting rebounds, getting out in transition, pushing the pace, crashing the boards. I mean, that's the sort of thing that you want to see from Bam. And I mean, he was the only reason I thought that, he was one of the main reasons why, I should say, the Heat were even in that game in the first half.
Yeah. Solid other performances from Goran Dragic, who finished with 19 points, and a second strong game from D. Wade, who had 25 points and 11 of 18 shooting. So I don't know. Again, I still worry whether or not it's sustainable. I think the pace of this game certainly lent itself to D. Wade putting up a number of shots, but still a strong showing, and it was nice to see.
Let's do a quick playoff update before we close out the show. So Detroit won on Wednesday night, and with Miami losing this game, the Pistons closed the gap for eighth place to 2 games, where the Heat did have a 3-game lead on the eighth spot over the Pistons. The 76ers, at the time of us recording this right now, are currently locked in to a game with the Cavaliers. There's about a minute and a half left, so I don't know who wins that game. But basically, the 76ers are already – it's a close one. And the 76ers, though, are already in sixth place. Miami, regardless of what happens, they're still going to be 2 games behind Milwaukee for seventh. So really the story here is the gap between Detroit and Miami. Now, again, a 3-game lead diminishes to 2 games, and then Miami's next game is Detroit on Saturday. This is – look, that Philadelphia 76ers game was probably the most important game of the season. You know, this Lakers loss is bad, but at least it's to a Western Conference team, you know, that's not involved in the playoff race that Miami is in. This game against Detroit on Saturday is going to be the biggest game of the season so far for the Heat.
Yeah, look, Detroit is going to be on the second night of a back-to-back. They play in Orlando on Friday. Milwaukee plays as well. They've got a good game against Indiana, so that has playoff implications as well. Philadelphia is playing Charlotte. So all these teams are playing tomorrow night. So if Miami gets lucky, all 3 teams could possibly lose that night and clear some space there. So it's not a devastating loss. It just felt bad again. And you know, following up that strong win over Philadelphia, this was a complete letdown. Like it felt wrong the way the Lakers were able to just abuse Miami defensively. Yeah. It didn't seem like the same team that we saw a couple nights ago.
Well, you hope that they bounce back, right, for that game against Detroit. Still a lot of games to be played. That's all we have for this week. We'll be back on Monday with a recap of what happened over the weekend. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.